Today is June 29th, 10:16 in the morning. I am Jamil Russell, the interviewer. The oral historian is Mr. Merchant. This project is titled Oral Histories on Plant Closings in Milwaukee. Okay, I'd like to start by, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and where you were born? Okay.
My name is Timothy McMurtry, Sr. I was born in Waterloo, Iowa, July 28th, 1945. Came to Milwaukee approximately September 1947 and been here ever since. Okay. After the service, I went to school at Riverside High School. Left Riverside, went to the service. After the service, went and got a job at A.O. Smith. This was approximately June 1967. Okay. Well, I got out of service in June 67. Got the job at A.O. Smith in August 67. Worked there for the next 33 years, and I left approximately January 2000.
Okay. Do you have any children, wife?
I'm married, have three kids, two sons and a daughter. The daughter's the oldest. I got one son, Timothy II. He works for Mueller Communications. I got second son, Todd. He's in the military, presently stationed in Colorado.
Okay. What school do your children go to?
Well, it was Custer and Wauwatosa West.
Okay. All right, so you say you worked at A.L. Smith for a long time.
33 years.
33 years?
Yeah.
Did your company provide pensions?
Yes, they did.
Okay. Because the plant closed down and... What was the African-American community like before, like while things, A.L. Smith was open?
Well, while A.L. Smith was open, the African-American community basically was middle to upper, middle class status. Mm-hmm. Like people had jobs, people had homes, people had cars. Dreams was of sending kids to college. Mm-hmm. But that was shared, like, not only people at A.O. Smith, but all the other manufacturing places that was situated in the Milwaukee metropolitan area, mm-hmm. like Harness Rager, even the breweries. It was a lot of jobs when it was jobs. It was a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And I had people that started, when I started at A.O. Smith, didn't like what they was doing. After a week, they left, and before the second week was over, they was employed someplace else. Mm-hmm. And like these were family supporting jobs, like I said, where you could have a house, a car, and aspire to send your kids to college. Mm-hmm. And that was the general mindset.
Mm-hmm. You said people worked at other places. What do you know specifically what other places they worked at?
Like, Harness Rager, Grady Foundry, Patrick Cudahy. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of what the names of these places were before the names changed. Like, the names are all changed now. But it was all the heavy manufacturing, like where they make the mining equipment, mm-hmm. those places. Where they had foundries, those places, mm-hmm. where they had breweries, those places. All these places supplied family supporting jobs. Like I said, including like Patrick Cudahy at the time was supplying family supporting jobs mm-hmm. for people. Mm-hmm. As opposed to now, where it's virtually no jobs in the immediate metropolitan area. And like I'm seeing, like from the north side, from where A.O. Smith was, all the way to the south side where Patrick Cudahy is, like thousands and thousands of jobs have been eliminated, moved, or factories just closed. Mm-hmm. Even Briggs and Stratton was right over here, like from our location, not that far from here. Master Lock from our location, not that far from here. We're supplying family supporting jobs. And like, if you go 20 years with the median income growing less than 3% in that 20 years, you have taken that family supporting job pay to family scuffling job pay. And that's what's happened in the interim since I've been retired. And that's been like, you gotta consider though, it's like 15 years. 15 years is a lot of change, all to the negative, all seeming against the inner city. Even though the inner city is the biggest economic mover in the state, the whole state seemed to be turning to trying to be like Tennessee or South Carolina, one of those states where they don't have nothing that people are trying to get away from. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have that much industry, but you can see downtown on the riverfront, they're constantly building new apartments, lakefront, trying to build new apartments. And I'm trying to figure out where those people that be staying in those apartments come from, mm-hmm. other than someplace in Illinois.
Yeah.
You know, because there's no jobs, you know, here to support that kind of, you know, building or, you know, mm-hmm. apartment availability, you know, vacancies and, you know, capacities and stuff. I don't see it because we don't have an industrial base no more.
Mm-hmm. How was the work environment at A. O. Smith? Was it like a lot of influence with drugs and stuff like that? Or in people, because I heard people was literally drug dealing stuff during.
Hey, when I first started working at A. O. Smith, they had approximately 5,600 people working there. Mm-hmm. And 5,600 people, you get everything that the community provides. It can't be no different than the community. It's a reflection of the community. They had riffraff. They had people that, you know, had the job for a cover, more or less. They had people that, you know, really, really, you know, needed a job. And you had from one extreme to the other extreme, no matter if those extremes was up and down or left and right. You had people on the fringes, but you had the mass in the middle, you know, hard working, because the work out there was hard, doing what they had to do to get by doing that hard work. Mm-hmm. In an atmosphere that was not really conducive to blacks and whites working together, but it was a common theme. The common theme was, hey, like, you know, you can't be white and begrudging me from having this job here in the inner city, because I know why I'm here, but the fact is, you white, and all the doctors, all the lawyers, all everybody I see else is white. Why are you here? Mm-hmm. That's the question. But then, like I'm saying, it was, you know, whatever the community could support, you had it out there because you had such a large workforce. Mm-hmm. By the time I retired, I guess the workforce was down to something like way less than 2,000.
You said there was like racism was prevalent back then. So was it like A. O. Smith itself, was it segregated? Like were there part where blacks would work at and whites would work at?
No, you had blacks and whites working side by side, but it was, you know, that animosity about, you know, like, hey, I'm white and I'm supposed to be better than you, but mm-hmm. here you is, you working here too. So, you know, you got to try to, you know, overcome that. And the job, you had to overcome attitudes in the job. You have to realize what the times were. These was, you know, like I said, I started in 1967. 1967 Milwaukee was way more race averse than Milwaukee 2015 is, mm-hmm. even though we are the most racist city in the country now. Mm-hmm. It was worse then. So, yeah, you had to keep that, you know, in mind. But you had a job, you had a family, you had things that you had to do to support your family. Mm-hmm. You wanted your kids to, you know, aspire to do better than what you did. Mm-hmm. And that was a common theme of everybody that came through the door and punched the clock. But now how that break down is, I'm white, you black, hey, it's got to be something different, you know, because I'm white and you're black. That thing played out however it played out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what was the wages like? Was it constant throughout the whole time the hospital was open, or did it start to decrease towards when it started to close down?
Well, that's a hard one to answer because in my career out there, I've always tried to make the most money my seniority would allow me to make. Mm-hmm. You had some people that the job they got walking in the door was the job they had when they walked out the door. Mm-hmm. You had some people, you know, come through the ranks and get into, you know, mid-management stuff, but I stayed in the union. And like I said, as far as I was concerned, I tried to make as much as I could that my seniority would allow. Mm-hmm. So that meant being able, you know, to adapt to different jobs. Like they had production work, they had transportation work, and then the production work, they had like an incentive, like you got paid $2 an hour, but then you got paid 30 cents for each piece you made. Mm-hmm. So the more pieces you make, you can take that, whatever that base money was, and make it, you know, $5, $10, $15 an hour at the time. Mm-hmm. And in 1967, if you was making $8,000 a year, mm-hmm, you was pretty much, you know, top of the food chain around here. You can get whatever you want done. Because, mm-hmm, you got to consider, like, you can take $20 and go to the grocery store and get food for 2 weeks.
Exactly.
You know, it's, the wages were commensurate with the time. So when they say family supporting, it was family supporting. It was a little better than family support. Mm-hmm. It allowed you to, you know, have vacations. It allowed you to have, you know, that boat if you wanted it. Mm-hmm. It allowed you, you know, to have to not worry about, you know, your kids having school clothes when school started in the summer. Mm-hmm. And that kind of stuff. So the actual numbers, you know, they're kind of blurred now, but, you know, what you was able to do with it, you know, is what stands out.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier you was part of a union. Can you tell me specifically what union you was in and what did they do in the community?
Okay. It was DALU 19806. Mm-hmm. I was a union steward and various committees within the union. What they did for the community, well, the community about where we worked at, we had like neighborhood Christmas parties, we had coat drives. When I say the neighborhood Christmas party, like, you know, we'd have the kids from the neighborhood, you know, come to our union hall. Mm-hmm. And Christmas party, boys got gifts, girls got gifts. They had, you know, little candy and stuff, you know, little food, you know, just, you know, stuff like that to kind of, you know, endear us to the neighborhood as opposed, you know, ostracize us from the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, pretty much a lot of, you know, the neighborhood involvement. We participated in a thing they used to call Labor Fest. Mm-hmm. So on Labor Day, you know, all the unions would get together and, you know, have, you know, an activity. As other unions did community things. It wasn't no stuff like we got now where, you know, like you go out and, you know, build houses and stuff. It was just that your union would show up, you know, and deliver stuff, you know, to various little organizations, you know, in the community. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, just little things like that.
Did more African Americans specifically come over to the Union when the plants closed down and all those jobs were taken away from them? Did they come to the Union just basically like have a say about what was going on?
No.
No? Why not? Why you think? Why not?
Well, generally speaking, the Union had two functions. One function was to make sure that the work rules were observed and utilized by the company. The other function of the Union was to not let a whole bunch of knuckleheads did not know how to demonstrate that they wanted and needed jobs to lose those jobs. Mm-hmm. And people got short-sighted. They could always see somebody who they felt should not be there, be served by the Union, more than they could see the Union making sure that the work rules was enforced by the company. Mm-hmm. And so therefore they became like, I wouldn't say ostracized. They just didn't see a need for a union. Mm-hmm. Much like today, people don't understand, you know, what happened to really make unions necessary. What made unions necessary was the fact that you had never in the history of mankind where you had a benevolent employer. Mm-hmm. Even this guy with this credit card billing company with his under 40 employees that was in the news recently talking about, hey, I'm gonna take and make everybody make at least $70,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Okay, you say, well, hey, well, that's a benevolent employer. Mm-hmm. Nah, because it's a shrewd business plan. You endear the people to you. You have them forever, and hopefully, you know, they'll, you know, give you three or four times the production that they was giving you prior to doing that. Mm-hmm. But even there, I'd imagine there's some instances where people think that their rights are being violated, and there's a need for, you know, somebody to step up and save them. Like, you say, hey, man, I'm going to go and me and the boss, we cool. So I'm gonna go talk to the boss, you know, and try to, you know, try to get more money. Mm-hmm. 10 of y'all doing the same job for the same money. Mm-hmm. Is it cool that you can go and ask the boss for more money? Cause he say, yeah, I'll give you more money. I'm gonna take some money from, you know, three of the people that you're working with. Mm-hmm. To make up for the money that I'm giving you. But you still 10, still doing the same job, used to be for the same money. Mm-hmm. Now what kind of animosity does that create? So you need a way to, you know, even out and, you know, just make it a level playing field for all of y'all. So rather than that one guy getting more money and three people losing money, mm-hmm. we give all of y'all a little bit more money. You know, mm-hmm. and the unions, they came about because, like, you think back to the days of Ford Motor Company. You think back to the days of Carnegie Steel when they had 6 and 7 year olds working factories. They'd work 8 hours a day and their parents worked 16 hours a day. Mm-hmm.
you try to, you know, get away to even the playing field. And that's what the job of unions was supposed to be. Depending on what side the playing field line you was on, it was either good for you or, you know, a detriment to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you was on the side where, you know, hey, you had to give up something for the betterment of the whole, you was against it. If you was on the side where, hey, all of us together, we can achieve more as a group than an individual, mm-hmm. then you was for it. But it was never a question about the need for it, but it was always a need for it. Just to, you know, stop people from just money grubbing. You know, you did not want, you did not not want the person you was working for to make money.
Mm-hmm.
Because you wanted a job. In order for you to have a job, they had to make money.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to make money, you know, you wanted to be able to do the things that you work for out the money you made at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had to, you know, drift to a union. Like now, the amount of union participation is at pretty much an all-time low. Because you got things like right to work and everybody think that that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody think that companies are benevolent. You be in Tennessee and here comes a car company saying, hey, I'm gonna come down here and give y'all some jobs. Everybody in the area is working on the farms. It was, you know, making subsistence money.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm gonna come and give you, you know, a couple dollars more than minimum wage money. So, hey, hallelujah.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be at Walmart, you'd be working, you know, 20 years and say, hey, look, I can't do nothing with the money I'm making. I said, what you talking about? He said, well, hey, I'm working at Walmart and I still got to go in badger care. What's up with that? And I got a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
Walmart recently said, hey, I'm going to give everybody, you know, $9 right away. The next year, I'm going to give you $10. Take $15 in today's money to have a family supporting job. So you went from wherever you was to 9 for this year. Next year you go to 10. 15 is still over there.
Mm-hmm.
And without a union, without nobody, you know, to argue for you, without nobody to give a collective, you know, to bring the workforce together, that 15 is still way, way an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
You got places like McDonald's. I say, hey, man, you know. I say, well, these are entry-level jobs for kids. They're not entry-level jobs for kids. Go to some McDonald's, you got people older than me working there.
Mm-hmm.
And that ain't no, you know, that ain't no kid, that ain't no entry-level job. And if it is an entry-level job for kids, what you want him to do? You want him to be able to buy his books when school come around? You want him to be able to buy clothes and stuff? Or what you want him to do? Just get enough money to go out and buy a bag of weed? What? You know, what you paying him, what you want him to do with that money? You know. So, yeah, so it's still a toss up.
Do you know why specifically A.L. Smith closed down? Do you think it was the economy and the way it was going that served as why it closed down and everything else went in a total different direction?
A.L. Smith shut down basically because they was able to outsource a lot of their operation, and part they didn't outsource, they sold to other corporations that was doing business outside of, you know, the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
The part of A.L. Smith that wasn't over there on Capitol, the waterworks, thriving, still going strong, strong as ever. When I left A.L. Smith, part of the reason I left when I left was they had this thing called NAFTA. And under NAFTA, if your job was shipped to another country, you was able to get, you know, monetary compensation and a chance to train for, you know, other jobs within the place where you worked.
Mm-hmm.
I had done most of the other jobs in the place where I worked, and I felt that, you know, it was time for me to go because, like I said, I had 33 years. There are some guys out there that had, you know, 10 and 15. And I was moving out the way because I could make it, you know, tired of working.
Mm-hmm.
I could make it. And they needed those jobs. And so I just, you know, I took, virtually took the buyout and left.
Mm-hmm.
Some people didn't get a chance to do that. A lot of people didn't get a chance to do that. A lot of people thought when they went from A.O. Smith to Tower, that that was going to give them some longevity. Some other people took the approach that when they went from A.O. Smith to Tower, that that was a handwriting on the wall. And so however, you know, you gauge yourself from that thought till you got out, that's what you did and that's what you wound up with.
Did A.O. Smith give you guys their compensation when they closed down from NAFTA and stuff? Did they give you their employees their money for like 401k's, pensions and stuff? And
yeah, like I said, I got a pension.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it comes from A.O. Smith, part of it comes from Tower.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, so A.O. Smith, did they sell their pension over to Tower?
Not totally, because like I said, because part of my pension comes from A.O. Smith,
mm-hmm.
and part of it comes from Tower.
Mm-hmm. What is it, the same amount, or how does that work out exactly?
About the same amount, because I had more time in A.O. Smith, but A.O. Smith's a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, you can't buy a month's worth of gas or your car with the difference.
Yeah.
You know.
Was Tower like near as successful as A.O. Smith when it took over?
Depends on what you call, what Tower was a holding company. They wanted to get into the automotive construction business by acquiring places that was already in that business.
Mm-hmm.
They thought it was something, you know, coming up that's going to be, you know, a great big future in. As the auto industry started to consolidate, and as the economy and businesses of holding companies started to change, it became non-productive to have that here in the state of Wisconsin due to the fact we were, you know, what they call a closed shop. If you worked here, you had to join a union. And they felt that the union benefits cut too deeply into their profits.
Mm-hmm.
So they was able to acquire other companies like A.O. Smith. And eventually, you know, the stuff that they didn't move off to down in Mexico, moved it to those other companies that mm-hmm. they had. And I'm not sure if that's still a large part of that holding company's business now, because you see the consolidation. You know, you got like Volkswagen owns, you know, 20 nameplates. You got a lot of automotive companies owning, you know, a lot of different nameplates. Like, it would be hard for somebody to believe that Bentleys and Volkswagens were made by the same people. You know, stuff like that. That's how the consolidation went.
How did you feel when A.L. Smith closed down? Did you hear stories of specifically African Americans, and like, did they say, like, any of your friends or whatever call you, let you know about it closing down and how it affected them?
Yeah, like, Milwaukee's not that big, you know. And when I left, I was still in contact with people who was working. You know, it wasn't like I left and, you know, we stopped going to the same places, stopped doing the same things. So it's just like, you know, like, hey, I wasn't working no more. And it affected black and white pretty much the same. I say it affected the white more than it affected the black, due to the fact that most of the black workers lived within a 30-minute drive of the place. 30 minutes being, you know, real extreme for a black person to be that far away from the factory. White compadres on the other side, 2.5 hours away from the factory. If you live 2 hours away from A.L. Smith, you had a whole lot more invested in you trying to have a job than somebody who lived 15 minutes away. Mm-hmm. Most of the white guys I knew that was still working when A.L. Smith shut down, they had to pound the pavement to find other jobs. Mainly because, you know, the toys that they wouldn't let black people get. Mm-hmm. So I said, hey man, you know, got a house and a car, my house almost paid for. So I ain't that stressed. On the other hand, you got that cool boat, you got that trailer, got that cabin up north, you know. You out here living in, you know, Pewaukee someplace, Kewaskum. Got that multi-$100,000 house to try to get paid for, and, you know, you didn't have your wife working. It's a stress on you that, you know, that I didn't have, that most of the black people didn't have. So, you know, whatever category you set up, you're going to have a certain percentage, you know, bleeding in that category.
Mm-hmm. Did things around your community, like, start to change when the plants closed down in A.L. Smith and stuff? Because, you know, parents were able to pay for their children to go to school and stuff, and now that they can't do that, they start coming on the streets and stuff like that. And even the union itself, the numbers went down drastically, almost basically by half. The membership went down, so...
Well, you talk about union membership, you mean like citywide union membership?
Yeah, basically.
Like, actually, our union virtually dissolved as far as, you know, union activities go. Like, what a union activity? We would, like our last years, before anybody knew anything about, you know, they was going to get ready to close or whatever, but we was in our heyday, like, the union would say some stuff like, man, it's wintertime out here, and I see a lot of our guys coming to work with those little denim jackets and stuff. A lot of our guys, you know, they're not dressing for the weather. So the union went out and contracted to design and buy jackets for all the members. Did that twice. You might have seen some of them jackets, a burgundy jacket with gray sleeves, with the union emblem on the side. It was a gray jacket with a hoodie built in, the union thing on the side. And it was a way that, you know, you'd be out shopping someplace and you could see somebody in that jacket. You had, you know, you knew you had a kinship with that person because, yeah, he was, you know, from A.L. Smith. Mm-hmm. The union would take a Sunday in August and rent out part of the Milwaukee County Zoo. They would have catered food. They would get the kids a couple ride tickets. They would pay for your parking. And each union member could bring as many as 10 guests. Now, Snazzy's was the caterer. They missed that. The zoo missed the fact that they had, like, all the tickets that they sold for the rides and the various exhibits out there. They missed that. The stores and other places that we got, but they was giving out as raffle prizes or whatever, they missed that. Plus the people, families, missed the whole thing. It's just to show that whenever the union did something, more than just the people involved in that direct union benefited, it was a community benefit. Like, hey, now here's Sazzy's, you know, where you got they got 6,000 people you got to feed. And you know that that's going to happen, you know, year to year to year to year. On that one day, you got 6,000 people to feed. You got that, you know, pretty much in your business plan for that year. Here it is, you the zoo. You know you got paid parking for this many people, you know, every year. You got that in your business plan. Here it is, you know that you're going to sell, you know, 20,000 tickets for, you know, you have to have like the little train ride they got at the zoo. And some of the exhibits you have to pay to get in to see at the zoo. Here it is, you're going to have 20,000 tickets sold for those things for one day every year. Like, this is a big economic, you know, mover. Mm-hmm. We decided to buy jackets, you know, like, hey, everybody, you know, that made jackets, you know, wanted to be in on selling 2,000 jackets. So without the union being there now, that is not happening anymore. You know, like, we're not going to Walmart and Best Buy to get $20,000 worth of, you know, little shit to give out. So that's not happening anymore. You know, like, the impact was, you know, more on it was a large impact on the community by, you know, direct stuff the union was doing in the community. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The African American community, do you know any like short term effects that you can contribute to A.L. Smith closing down that had on the African American community?
Yeah, the African American community, by the time A.L. Smith shut down, was taken out of the economic effect on the African American community of Milwaukee when A.L. Smith shut down was dramatic. Mm-hmm. Short term, mid term, and long term. Short term was the people that had jobs
they no longer have jobs. The midterm was the people that was looking for jobs lost a place to find a job. The long term was when these people was working, they were sending their kids to college. Now you done dramatically, you know, reduce the number of kids that was going to college. Mm-hmm. That would come out of college without owing that $40,000 average that mm-hmm. kids come out of college owing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was dramatic. And you know, look around here. You know, got that vacant lot over there. You go on North Avenue. It's still, you know, a lot of vacant lots. Mm-hmm. You go down 27th Street. It's not a high. It's not a lot of places to shop because nobody, you know, got the money to put in anything to have you come to shop because they don't know the median income of the people that surround them. Mm-hmm. Now, on the whole, not just A.O. Smith shutting down, but all the manufacturing leaving Milwaukee, you know, contributed to that. But in this immediate area right here, the people that didn't, you know, move out to Glendale or Menominee Falls or whatever, when you cut their lifeline, it's, you know, it's an effect. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, let's say you went outside and walked like down the street somewhere, and what specific things would you see happening when A.O. Smith and the plants closed down? Like, did the crime rate go up higher? Was there more drugs being sold and stuff like that?
When the plant closed and you went outside, you probably saw more quality of life issues not being addressed. Mm-hmm. Like, somebody was renting this house over here. They were cutting the grass. They were shoveling snow. They lost their job. The owner of that house, he don't live there, he lives someplace else. Mm-hmm. But he can't get over here to cut the grass or to shovel the snow. That house might become abandoned, depending on if the owner can, you know, come up with tax money to keep ownership of his property. Mm-hmm. If it becomes abandoned, you know, drugs, you know, represent, you know, the amount of sorrow that's in the area that's got people turning to drugs other than turning to, you know, other things, you know, to ease their existence. So, blight is what we're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the people that was doing this? Were they mostly like teenagers or really young kids or something like that? Was it basically like next generation getting involved with these things that was going on?
I'm saying, as you became a high school graduate and you didn't have nothing to do, you didn't have no grades to go to college, you didn't have no place to go to work, mm-hmm. what you gonna do? Yeah, that became the problem. That became the issue. You be having people more worried about building expressways and figuring a way for you not to have that construction job than building something in your neighborhood Hey, I watched Northridge get built and close. You know?
Why did it close down?
Closed down because the people in the area, you know, didn't have the funds to keep it up. Southridge still working. Bayshore still working. This Midtown used to be called Capitol Court. Capitol Court had closed down too, but then they came up in there with a new idea and made it Midtown. They didn't come with no new ideas from the people over there, you know, on the northwest side, where Northridge was. But Northridge was being supported by a whole lot of people that had family supporting jobs. And with the family supporting jobs, that means you got transportation to get there. Mm-hmm. And if you got someplace where you can't get to, you know, what's happening?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what happened. Look at downtown. Downtown used to be vibrant. Downtown used to have, you know, stuff that you'd go shopping for. When was the last time you bought something from downtown?
Can't remember.
That gets to be an issue. When was the last time you went downtown to the show? Wisconsin Avenue used to have 4 or 5, you know, upscale shows. You didn't have to go out to the suburbs, you know, to see, you know, first round opening night movies. You know, you could go downtown and see them. You know, it's just, as jobs leave, one category of jobs leave, another category of jobs, you know, show up. So like the manufacturing jobs, you know, they all dwindle. And then so the things that people in those manufacturing jobs were doing dwindles. Go to service sector. Service sector is fine on the top end, but that curve to get to the top is, it starts here. You got McDonald's workers, you got people, data entry workers. Now you got people actually working with computers. Now you got people, you know, actually doing the service. And the service is, you know, some type of financial service. But the thing is, it comes here, and then starts to go up here. Manufacturing started here and went to here right away.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's, you know, that's the difference. And what kind of activities you want to do. Got a service kind of job, and I live kind of downtown. I'm going to try to be near that job. You look at Slits Park. What happened, you know, to Slits Park before it became Slits Park? What happened to all those businesses that was on Martin Luther King Drive when it was called Third Street, now it's called Martin Luther Drive, from Center Street all the way down to Juno. Once it gets past Juno, then it becomes, you know, something else. Because Martin Luther King Drive, you know, Old World Third Street, Water Street, that little area right there.
Mm-hmm.
But from Center Street to the beginning of that area, which is about Juno, you know, what happened? You know, people used to shop down there. Used to be things to do down there. Now the biggest thing down there is the place that sells kitchen supplies.
Mm-hmm.
Crown Hardware, you know, and that whole stretch, most viable businesses down there are those who,
You got that little stuff happening on, you know, North Avenue and stuff, you know, that, you know. They got a Subway sandwich shop and a sports apparel shop. They, you know. Mm-hmm. But long term, from when I was a kid, Crown Hardware, that's down there with Paul Brown, and that Fern, place is right there on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, used to be activity down there. Used to be like, are you familiar with Harley's men's store?
Mm-hmm.
There's a store called Brill's, same level, but back, you know, in this time. There were Gimbo Schuster's, equivalent to Boston store,
mm-hmm.
down there. Used to be movie theaters down there. Used to be a decent grocery store down there. But look at that area from Center Street down in Juneau. And that's just indicative of, you know, what's happening. It's probably all not a direct result of, but it's partially a result of, because you don't get no planning now,
mm-hmm.
for that. You don't get no visions of doing things for that, because your prospective customer or client, you know,
mm-hmm.
harder to find now.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, that's all I have for you today. Thank you, Vander.
Oh. It's been my pleasure.